Hebrews chapter 2, verses 5 to 18. It is not to angels that he has subjected the world to come, about which we are speaking, but there is a place where someone has testified. What is mankind that you are mindful of them, a son of man that you care for them? You made them a little lower than the angels. You crowned them with glory and honor, and put everything under their feet. In putting everything under them, God left nothing that is not subject to them. Yet at present we do not see everything subject to them. But we do see Jesus, who was made lower than angels for a little while, now crowned with glory and honor, because he suffered death, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. In bringing many sons and daughters to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the pioneer of their salvation perfect through what he suffered. Both the one who makes people holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters. He says, I will put my trust in him. And again he says, here am I and the children God has given me. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is, the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants. For this reason he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those who are being tempted.
Hebrews chapter 3, verses 1 to 6. Therefore, holy brothers and sisters, who share in the heavenly calling, fix your thoughts on Jesus, whom we acknowledge as our apostle and high priest. He was faithful to the one who appointed him, just as Moses was faithful in all God's house. Jesus has been found worthy of greater honor than Moses, just as the builder of a house has greater honor than the house itself. For every house is built by someone, but God is the builder of everything. Moses was faithful as a servant in all God's house, bearing witness to what would be spoken by God in the future. But Christ is faithful as the Son over God's house, and we are his house, if indeed we hold firmly to our confidence and the hope in which we glory.
Thank you very much, Yanni. Please keep your Bibles open there. We're going to look at that part of the Bible together. Hebrews chapter 2, verse 5 to chapter 3, verse 6. Here's the title. I'm only human after all. Maybe I'm foolish. Maybe I'm blind. I make mistakes. I'm no prophet or Messiah. Should go looking somewhere higher. I do what I can. I'm just a man. Don't put the blame on me. Well, if you've walked through a shop or listened to a radio in the last few years, you've probably heard those words before, sung by Rag and Bone Man. It was Christmas number 2 in 2016, with sales in millions. I guess a lot of people can relate to those words, already a very familiar saying even before. I'm only human. Don't expect too much from me, because you shouldn't expect all that much from human beings. We don't get everything right. Not everyone likes the lyrics of that song. I enjoyed reading an article by a journalist called Anna Leshevich, her article had this title, I'm Only Human, The Rise and Rise of Male Singers Who Cannot Take Criticism. She begins by saying, clearly, these songs have resonated with a nation of men who believe they are beyond reproach. And she puts the emphasis on, I'm just a man, don't put the blame on me. Well, whether we see it as an explanation or as an excuse, I'm only human, I guess that we can probably agree that human beings do seem to fall short. We seem to be weak, we seem to fail and let each other down, we get things wrong, we're a disappointment to ourselves and to others some of the time. And so perhaps it should come as a shock to us that Christianity is all about the perfect, holy God of the whole universe becoming one of these human beings. God made man. How could that possibly be right? It's a thought, isn't it? The infinite creator of the universe who knows everything and can do everything, becoming a person like us made of a bunch of chemicals that you could probably find in a child's chemistry set, about the same price, about the same quantity, and yet he became one of us. And some people say, well, that's ridiculous. I can't believe that that could possibly be true. And it seems that when Hebrews was written, people were getting that kind of abuse and that kind of criticism. These guys were being told, look, how can you follow this Jesus? We don't mind if you're religious. They grew up as Hebrews. They grew up as Jewish people. They knew the Old Testament. They were religious, perhaps in the temple, perhaps in the synagogue. But that was respectable. The Roman authorities approved of that. That was legitimate. It was allowed. But then at some point they heard about Jesus and they became part of what, well, the Romans thought it was a dangerous cult. Probably up a back street, a side street, meeting in someone's house. Not respectable anymore. Bit of an embarrassment that they follow this Jesus. Especially because they're really worshipping somebody who, you know, who died on a cross. Someone has found, through some excavations, a sort of carving on the wall from about this time. There it is. That's what it looks like on the left. The words are in Greek letters, but what it says is, Alexamenos worships his God. And you can see there a picture of the worshipper, Alexamenos, on the left. And on the right, you've got a human figure on a cross with a donkey's head. You see, this bit of graffiti is mocking some Christian called Alexamenos and saying he's such an idiot. He would even worship a person who would get killed. It's like worshipping a donkey. That's what they were hearing. That's the sort of thing the readers of this letter were probably hearing as well. So why did God become human? That is what this chapter is really answering. Why did God become human? We saw, didn't we, last Sunday, the writer saying, look, don't give up on Jesus. Don't go back to your old ways. Don't drift back to being Jewish. Don't be respectable and moral, but drop Jesus out of things. Don't do that, because Jesus is amazing. He's superior. He's far better than anyone else you could be listening to. He's superior. He's way above everybody else. That was chapter 1 and the start of chapter 2. But now, the writer is saying, yes, he's amazing, he's superior, but he also became human. Chapter 1 is about Jesus being superior to the angels. But chapter 2 tells us he also became lower than the angels. And the writer says, look, that is right and necessary. So in our reading, we heard in verse 9, Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels. Verse 10 says, it was fitting. It was fitting that he should suffer. Verse 11 says Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters. Verse 17 says he had to be made like them. The whole chapter really explaining and justifying, why did God become human? Why was that right? Why was that wonderful good news? We're going to see. This is great. It's fantastic for us that Jesus did, that God did become human. And I'm just going to sum it up in four. Four items of good news in this chapter. Why did God become human? Firstly, to lead us to glory. To lead us to glory. That's verses 6 to 10. God had to become one of us. He had to become human and take on our humanity so that he could lead our humanity up to glory. So that he could take us back to where we're meant to be, to make us the people we're supposed to be, to achieve our true potential. Let's follow through the argument. If you look with me down at page 1202, verse 6, quoting from the Old Testament, but there is a place where someone has testified. This is actually from Psalm 8 in the Old Testament. There is a place where someone has testified. What is mankind? Great question. Can you answer that? What is mankind? What is mankind that you are mindful of them? A son of man that you care for them? In other words, why, God, would you bother with little tiny human beings like us? Who are we? What are we? What is man? What is the son of man? Now, you might know that Jesus often called himself son of man, but actually this was written before the title was used in that way. When Psalm 8 was written, it was just a way of talking about a human being. So it's asking the same question twice. What is mankind that you're mindful? What is the son of man? Why do people matter? Why are human beings important? Verse 6. Verse 7, you, God, you made them, human beings, a little lower than the angels. You crowned them with glory and honour and put everything under their feet. The writer of the psalm is just remembering the beginning of the Bible, Genesis 1. God made us in his image, male and female, and he put creation under our authority. It's one of the reasons why the damage that we do to our environment is such a disaster, because God has put us in charge. We're supposed to be looking after it. Stewards of creation, overseeing what God has given us. And God has given us a great privilege, a great honour, a great glory, crowned us with glory and honour by saying that the whole world will be under us. We, of course, need to be under God, looking after and taking charge of this world in the likeness and image of God, in the way that God would want us to, in the way that he does. And that is what that's our potential. That is what a human being is meant to be. That's what we were created for. A wonderful privileged place in this universe. Verse 8 continues, in putting everything under them, when God put everything under humanity, God left nothing that is not subject to them. It was meant to be everything that we're in charge of. Yet at present, we do not see everything subject to them. Look around the world today, says the writer, and you can see that it's not going so well. You can see that we're not doing a good job as human beings. There's no peace, there's no harmony, there's no order. Not just the environment, but international relationships and politics and community life and family life and the human heart and psyche. We can't even control ourselves. Everything in conflict and out of control. It's not like that now. You see, humanity has rejected God. It's not like that now. We don't see everything subject to humanity. But, verse 9, but there is one person who has reached that wonderful potential and lived in the image of God and been as we were meant to be, being a real, true human being. That is verse 9, that is Jesus. But we do see Jesus, who was made lower than the angels for a little while. During his lifetime, he did come down and become one of us. Now, crowned with glory and honour, now he's reached that place that all human beings were supposed to have, that glory, that honour in Psalm 8. Now crowned with glory and honour because he suffered death, so that by the grace of God he might taste death for everyone. Because Jesus died, he died for all of us. He represented all of humanity. We all deserved to die, but Jesus died in our place. He tasted death for all of us. And that is what brings us into glory. Verse 10, in bringing many sons and daughters to glory, it was fitting that God, for whom and through whom everything exists, should make the pioneer of their salvation perfect through what he suffered. So Jesus has come down into this world. He suffered and he's died on behalf of all of humanity, became human and died on behalf of humanity, and then rises from the dead. And we've told in chapter 1 that he sits on that throne. He's the first one to get there, the first one to get into that new world of risen, perfected people. And he has gone ahead of us. And he did that so that we could follow. He did that because by dying and rising again, he can take us with him into that new world, into that potential, into who we are meant to be, the people that we're supposed to be. I quite like this picture of the first footprints on the moon. We were remembering that just a few months ago, the anniversary of 1969. People talking about this was the day that humanity, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, the day that not just one person walked on the moon, but something was achieved for all of humanity. I guess the hope was that many of us would walk on the moon. It hasn't been all that many of us that have walked on the moon since then, but still people are hoping it will come. That was the point of it. For that leap forward for the whole of humanity, on behalf of everyone, to pioneer and lead the way. It wasn't just about him. And Jesus has done that. He's died and risen again for all of us, to bring us to glory, to make us the wonderful people we're supposed to be. I wonder if you see human beings that way. I wonder if you realise what glory and honour and privilege it is to be a human being. You might not always spot it when you first look at yourself in the mirror, or your friend or your brother or sister or whoever it might be. You might not see the wonder and the glory and the majesty of what it is to be human. But Jesus has perfected us and prepared us to be who we were made to be for all eternity. That's why God became man, to lead us to glory. And then secondly, God became man to free us from fear. To free us from fear. That's verses 11 to 16. In other words, it was right and necessary for God to become one of us so that he could, by dying, defeat death. So that we need not live our lives in anxiety and fear and worry of where it's all going to end. Chapter 2, verse 11. Verse 11, both the one who makes people holy and those who are made holy, in other words, both Jesus and those who know Jesus, are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters. So it's not as if God forced his son to come down to earth and said, look, you've got to get down there, they're really in a mess, they really need your help. And Jesus said, I really don't want to go, it's really much nicer up here, let me stay here, it looks very miserable, no, you've got to go. It wasn't like that at all. Jesus looks at us as his family, as his brothers, as his sisters, and comes down gladly to help us. The writer, all the way through, he likes to prove his point from the Old Testament, because they still believed the Old Testament. They were drifting away from Jesus. They still believed the Old Testament. So he proves the point to them from several places in the Old Testament that give us pictures of Jesus. I guess you know this if you've been reading the Bible for a while. The Old Testament, full of stories of people that point to Jesus. So the suffering king in Psalm 22, the suffering servant in Isaiah chapter 8. In both passages, you hear those who are suffering saying that they are doing it for their family, for their brothers and sisters. And that's what the next few verses quote from. Talking about brothers and sisters in verse 12, the suffering king. Verse 13 from Isaiah 8, here I am and the children God has given me. This is about family. Jesus came for his family. And then let's pick it up in verse 14. Since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity so that by his death he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. Jesus defeats the devil. Might sound like an old-fashioned, silly idea to talk about the devil, but we've seen from Jesus that there is a supernatural world, that there is a creator of everything who is God, that he has messengers who are angels, and it seems also the devil, also one of these angels who's rejected and defied God. What is his power? What power does he have over us? Well, his power is that he tempts us, he persuades us, he encourages us to disobey God, to reject God. And when we sin, we actually deserve to be punished by God. We deserve death. The reason that people die is that people sin. We all sin, and so we all die. It's the way the world is. But Jesus, you see, when he died, he had to become one of us. He had to be a human being, because then he could represent all of us and die that death that we deserve. And once he's died for us, then We no longer need to be punished. We no longer need death. We're set free from that. Yes, we will die. And yes, we might hope that it will be swift and painless and not for quite a long time. And that's fair. But we're actually not afraid of the outcome of death. Or we don't need to be if we follow Jesus. Might not like the process, but we're not afraid of the outcome. Because of the wonderful good news that Jesus became human and died in our place. We see death instead as just a door through to Jesus, to our brothers and sisters, to our family who are waiting for us in a perfect future and a perfect world. I don't know if you like poetry. Dylan Thomas, very famous poet, wrote a poem called Fern Hill, which is the farm that he grew up on. He's remembering when he was just very little and the time when he used to play outside on the farm, in the countryside, not a care in the world. And the poem begins, "As I was young and easy under the apple boughs." But the poem ends like this. "Time held me green and dying, though I sang in my chains." He's saying, even as a little child running around under a tree, time was holding me, yes, still green, still fresh, still new, but dying, already dying, in chains, unable to escape that death that is coming. And how much has changed now because of Jesus, when we know Jesus? We sing about it, don't we? My chains are gone. Set free from that fear of death. In total contrast, think of someone like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, a preacher before the Second World War, one of the preachers who said, look, you can't be a Christian and follow Hitler. It doesn't fit. It's not possible. Of course, the German government didn't like that and persecuted those Christians. And he managed to stay free until the last few months of the Second World War, when he was discovered and captured and taken off to be killed and led to his death. He said this, "This is the end, but for me, the beginning of life." Set free from living our lives in the fear of death. Why did God become man? To free us from fear. And then lastly, he became man to forgive us for sin. That's verses 17 and 18. He had to become human so that he could be one of us, so he could die our death on the cross, so he could swap places with us and be condemned while we are forgiven and loved and accepted. And that's verse 17. For this reason, verse 16, for surely it's not angels Jesus helps, but Abraham's descendants. For this reason, he, Jesus, had to be made like them, fully human in every way. That is Jesus, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. See, Jewish people knew that they needed a priest. As we go through life, we tend to need professionals to help us in different areas. We need a doctor. Sometimes we can't treat our own illness. As you go on, you might need an accountant. I'm using a lawyer at the moment to sort out some legal documents for me. I actually used to be a lawyer before I became a vicar, and I was a little bit tempted to do the legal work myself. But my friends who were lawyers, we used to have a saying that a lawyer who represents himself has a fool for a client. So I decided it wasn't wise to be my own lawyer. Better that I get a proper lawyer to do it on my behalf. You can't do these things for yourself. You need a professional sometimes. And in the Old Testament, they knew that you needed a priest. You needed to be forgiven by God. You needed somebody who could represent you before God. Somebody who could bridge that gap between God and humanity and bring us together. The word atonement, you could sort of split up the word and say at-one-ment, to make us at one with God, to deal with our sins and our guilt and wash it away so that we can be right with God. You need that. You need a priest. But wonderfully, here is a priest who offers his services completely free. I'm afraid the lawyers and accountants will charge you quite a lot of money. And Jesus asks for nothing from us, but says, let me do this for you. I'll offer a sacrifice, and I'll be the sacrifice. I'll die for you, and you can be forgiven. So Jesus, you see, he's God, but he's also human. He had to be fully human so he could be on both sides of that gap and bridge that gap and make us at one, so that he's paid for our forgiveness. And because of that, he's also able to help us when we continue to be tempted. Verse 18, because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he's able to help those who are being tempted. Because Jesus became a human and lived the life that we lead, he was without sin, but he wasn't without temptation. He knows what it's like for us. We can turn to him and trust that he really understands what we're going through. He's been there. And that he will deal with it and ensure that it is forgiven. And help us as we seek to change. So if you're going through hard times, the best person to help is someone who's been going through the same thing. Often people will turn to support groups for other people who've been in the same situation, struggled with the same issue. Very helpful to talk to someone who has been there. And Jesus has been there. He gets it. He understands. He's been tempted. If we're feeling lonely, he gets it. He left his heavenly home to come in this world, into this world, and be isolated and rejected. If we feel misunderstood, he knows what that is like. His own family thought that he was crazy and out of his mind. If we're experiencing physical discomfort and pain, he knows what that is like. He suffered an agonizing and slow death as he was executed on a cross. If we're facing a barrage of temptation, and we just don't know how we can resist, and it seems impossible, emotional pressures, sexual pressures, social pressures, he gets it. He spent 40 days and 40 nights face to face with Satan pouring on maximum 100% temptation to try and crack him and get him to break before he entered public ministry. So he knows what we go through. Let's turn to him and receive his forgiveness. So what does all of this mean for us? It means God became man to lead us to glory, to free us from fear, to forgive us for sin. So fix your thoughts on Jesus. And that's where our reading ended, in chapter 3, verses 1 to 6. So focus on him. Follow him. Trust him. Keep your eyes and your attention on Jesus. Don't let it drift away from him. Verse 1, chapter 3, verse 1. Therefore, you see that summing up everything in chapter 2. Therefore, what should we do about it? Holy brothers and sisters, Jesus is our family, our brothers. We're his brothers and sisters. He's made us holy, made us perfect. Chapter 2, verse 11. Holy brothers and sisters who share in the heavenly calling, chapter 2, verse 10. We've been called to glory, to heaven, to share glory that Jesus has led us to. Fix your thoughts on Jesus, whom we acknowledge as our apostle and high priest, chapter 2, verse 17. Fix your thoughts on him. Don't settle for anyone less than that. The rest of these verses are about Moses, big name for Jewish people. Hard to exaggerate how much they respected him, a hero of the Old Testament faith, a sort of Winston Churchill of Hebrew history. Some people perhaps feel that what we need today is someone like Winston Churchill to come and lead us. I don't know whether you're a fan or not. Perhaps then they would have said, let's have Moses. But the writer says no. As great as he was, he's just part of the household, the family. Fix your eyes on Jesus, who owns and rules this house. Chapter 3, verse 6. But Christ is faithful as the Son over God's house, and we are his house, if indeed we hold firmly to our confidence and the hope in which we glory. Well, will we do that? Will we hold on to our confidence in Jesus? Will we be sure of him and keep focused on him? If you're moving away from Cambridge. Will you hold on? Will you let Jesus kind of slip through your grasp like trying to hold a bar of wet soap and you just can't quite keep it? Or will it be more like one of those sort of dodgy bus rides or train rides with lots of people there and just gripping on so you don't fall over? Hold on to Jesus. A wonderful hope to have. Fantastic promises to be led into glory, to achieve your potential, to be the person you're made to be. To be set free from fear, not to spend a lifetime dreading an outcome that is getting closer and closer. And to know that we're forgiven, to have someone sympathetic and understanding who has paid the price for us. So let's fix our thoughts on Jesus.